Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Terrorism, Punitive Damages, and the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On February 24, 2020, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral argument in Opati v. Republic of Sudan, a case involving a dispute over whether the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act authorizes punitive damages for terrorist activities that took place before Congress amended the statute to provide an express cause of action contemplating such damages. Following the 1998 al-Qaeda bombing of American embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, victims and their families brought suit against the Republic of Sudan, alleging that it had assisted al-Qaeda in carrying out the attacks. In doing so, plaintiffs invoked a terrorism exception to the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, but there was uncertainty as to whether, even in the absence of an immunity bar, Congress had provided a federal cause of action for claimants such as plaintiffs. In 2008, however, Congress amended the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act to provide an express cause of action and directed that claims such as the plaintiffs be treated as if they had been originally filed under the new cause of action. Congress also made punitive damages available under the new cause of action and authorized the filing of new claims that arose out of the same incident as earlier claims. The plaintiffs amended their complaint accordingly and, following a bench trial, obtained a multi-billion-dollar damages award, including more than $4 billion in punitive damages. Sudan challenged the punitive damages award on appeal, arguing that Congress had not expressly authorized punitive damages based on conduct that predated its 2008 legislation. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit agreed, but the Supreme Court subsequently granted cert to consider whether, consistent with this decision in Republic of Austria v. Altman, a 2004 case, that the Foreign Service Immunities Act applies retroactively, thereby permitting recovery of punitive damages against foreign states for terrorist activities occurring prior to the passage of the current version of the statute. And now, to discuss the case, we have Roger Alford, Professor of Law at the University of Notre Dame.
So the FSIA, for those that follow it, are familiar to most of you, it provides general immunity from jurisdiction for foreign states and their agents and instrumentalities. But then it provides exceptions. The typical exceptions are commercial activity exception. There's an exception for the waiver of immunities, often in contracts. There's exceptions for takings that have a U.S. nexus and for arbitration clauses. Those are fairly standard exceptions to foreign sovereign immunities. The terrorism exception is different and quite complicated, and so let me just try to describe it briefly. The first version of it started in 1996, the so-called FLATO Amendment. It was in response to a terrorist attack that occurred in Israel, and the language of that amendment in 1605A7 provided that foreign states that the U.S. designates are state sponsors of terrorism shall not be immune from actions that are terrorist attacks, things like torture, extrajudicial killing, hostage taking, things like that. So the original 1996 amendment provided for a removal of immunity for state sponsors of terrorism. There was litigation that was filed, lots of litigation filed as a result of that provision, including litigation that is relevant to the current case involving the U.S. Embassy bombings. In this case, the case was filed in 2001. It was a default judgment because Republic of Sudan did not appear in 2003. The default judgment was rendered. Then they made an appearance the following year and sought to basically challenge the finding of liability as well as the responsibility for damages. In the meantime, the D.C. Circuit, in a case called Sisipio, concluded that the original terrorist exception was only a waiver of immunity. It did not create a cause of action. That was in 2004. So the Sisipio decision basically raised the doubts as to whether any of the previous claims were viable. This decision was rendered while the Opati decision was on appeal, And so the question was whether or not Apodi's case could continue going forward in light of the fact that the D.C. Circuit said that the terrorism exception was jurisdictional only, not creating a cause of action. So that's where things stood in the mid-2000s. In 2008, Congress tried to remedy the situation by making it explicit that they wanted to create a cause of action. And so one version of it was vetoed by President Bush because of concerns that it might result in the new government of Iraq being responsible for actions of Saddam Hussein, including punitive damages for actions by Saddam Hussein. But the final version of the language in 2008 basically created a cause of action for state-sponsored terrorism. And let me just read the critical language. Basically, it says that, you know, an action may be brought or maintained under this section if the action is commenced or a related action had been commenced under the old terrorism exception within 10 years. They have a 10-year statute of limitations. And then the language basically says a foreign state that is or was a state sponsor of terrorism or any of its official employees, agents, or officials who shall be liable to a U.S. national or a member of the armed services or an employee of the U.S. government for personal injury or death caused by acts described in the previous section. And then here's the critical language. It says, in any such action, damages may include economic damages, pain and suffering, and punitive damages. So in any such action, damages may include economic damages, pain and suffering, and punitive damages. So after that amendment was passed, the case continued. In the Arpati case continued, there was a determination of liability. There was also then an issuance of punitive damages by the federal district court in D.C., and that was in $4.3 billion. And then the district court decisions was appealed. And the real question on appeal was whether or not the punitive damage determination by the district court was permissible because the 2008 amendment, potentially the question arose whether or not the 2008 amendment allowed for the retroactive application of punitive damages. So the D.C. Circuit reviewed the decision, looked at the statute, and said that the language in the statute did not have retroactive effect. And then the Supreme Court granted cert. And the question for the court was whether or not the Supreme Court, whether or not the amendment, the 2008 amendment, created a retroactive effect for punitive damages arising out of the 2008 amendment. The two key cases that were considered are one involving Landgraf, a 1994 decision that provides guidance on the retroactivity of new federal causes of action. And then another one, the Republic of Austria versus Altman, which is 2004, addressing the retroactivity of the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. Those are the two key cases that were discussed both at the district court level, the D.C. Circuit, and then also before the Supreme Court. So basically, the Landgraf decision has a two-step analysis. It says if the intent of Congress is clear that a federal cause of action should have retroactive effect, then the court shall apply that intent and issue retroactive effect to the cause of action. But in the absence of a clear intent of Congress, then there should be a presumption of non-retroactivity. And the reason for that, the court said, was because of current concerns about fairness to the defendants, that they should be on proper notice before any action has retroactive effect. That's the Landgraf decision. The Altman decision is about the retroactivity of the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. And that was a decision basically asking whether or not the provisions of the FSAI had retroactive effect. But because the Altman decision dealt with only jurisdictional issues, there was questions about whether or not the Altman decision controls the case at bar, because this question was about the retroactivity of punitive damages. The oral argument in February, if you read the transcript or listen to the audio, focused almost exclusively on whether or not Congress had clearly spoken about intending for punitive damages to apply retroactively. In other words, there was almost no focus on the Altman decision and the relationship between the Altman decision and the Landgraf decision, and it was almost exclusively about whether or not the first prong of the Landgraf decision Congress had clearly spoken, and whether or not the statute met the requirements of that provision. So that was the real attention and focus of almost all of the questions. There was some discussion of the second prong of the Landgraf decision, the presumption against retroactivity. Chief Justice Roberts, as well as Justice Alito, asked whether or not that presumption was based on constitutional concerns or otherwise, and the suggestion being that a foreign sovereign as the defendant may not have the same constitutional protections as a private party, and so should we apply a presumption against retroactivity in the context of a case involving a foreign sovereign? The U.S. government made an appearance, and both in its brief and in its oral argument, basically saying that the Altman case should not control the case, but the Landgraf case was applicable, and the congressional intent was clear that it was intended to have retroactive effect. That seemed to be the direction of most of the justices in the oral argument. Obviously, we'll see where that goes in the next few weeks. But that's the sort of critical summary and update of the Apati decision. So we should know by the end of June what the court does. It's an interesting case about the clear intent of Congress language and in the parsing of the statute to determine whether or not there was such an intent. But there also is in the background this interesting constitutional question about the purpose of the presumption against retroactivity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUS Cast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.